Welcome to Questioning War, Organizing Resistance. I'm your host, and this evening we have a special 9/11 Truth Show in the wake of the 7th anniversary of 9/11. Today is September 15th, 2008, and actually I've organized a whole bunch of events in the last week, and one of our guests I actually met at a 9/11 Truth Rally. And he has worked within the White House, and his name is Michael Maxwell. He was a senior military officer at the Pentagon headquarters. He worked in the office of the Secretary of Defense at the White House, also at top secret laboratories, in combat crew training, NATO activities in Europe, the U.S. Congress, and he has done other things as far as strategic decision-making. Has had a very interesting life. Welcome, Michael, to the show.
Well, thank you, Carol. I'm happy to receive your invitation and participate in hopefully advancing truth and justice.
Good, good. Well, I want to ask you, because you have had this experience at the White House, you have expressed some serious doubts about the official narrative of 9/11, and I would like to know what you think happened or could have happened on September 11th that to have the complete failure of our trillion-dollar defense system in light of, you know, four hijackings that day.
All right. I was hoping to share this with Bob Bowman. Will he be available later today, tonight?
Yeah, I just spoke with Bob, and he arrived somewhere. So he's going to join us in the second hour. And we can bring him into the conversation. But before we get to him,
all right,
from your vantage point.
Okay, you're the lady in charge. In a large picture spectrum, let me say, and I look forward to having any callers, if that's part of the arrangement here, to respond to. I'm curious at the public's reaction to the facts, or the lack of the facts. My overall perspective is, at first I was a total doubter in, shall we say, the 9/11 truth movement and the 9/11 alternatives. And I was that because I anticipated that Cheney, although I knew him when I observed him in the Pentagon when he was Secretary of Defense, my reaction was, this man is not kind, not gentle, and he seeks his own advancement above everybody else. It was clear that Cheney only valued himself. Now let me focus more on what's relevant. I'm now, having seen the architectural evidence by Richard Gage, and then also myself from my perspective of how could this have been done and how might it have been done. That is, Cheney to have orchestrated or been primary in permitting to happen the 9/11 attack, which clearly did not occur as the official record describes. The most telling evidence is the architectural evidence. The building clearly, both buildings came down consistent with explosives being planted, as did number 7, an hour after the BBC was given some kind of a press release to read that 7 had already come down. In addition to that, the flim-flam offered by Bush and Cheney, and Cheney's total reluctance to permit any real investigation to go on and to hide whatever might be the vice president's foreknowledge or complicity, tells me that they've got a lot to hide. And then when I lay on that, I know how the office of the president can influence day-to-day intelligence determinations, especially the way Cheney had an opportunity to set up. And as people like Karen Kwiatkowski report, she observed from, you know, on-duty days in the Pentagon. It's totally the overwhelming facts that I see and the overwhelming reaction by an intelligent, thoughtful person to the conduct and behavior of Cheney and the White House. Again, I bring up that they fought for nearly 3 years to have any kind of an investigation, which, again, they clearly altered and manipulated. Those are clear to any person that bothers to inform him or herself. So you have to conclude, what are they hiding, and how might they have done things to be hiding it? And I agree with many observers that all the indications are it is the crime of the 21st century.
Now, can I ask a question, Michael? They were conducting multiple war games on September 11th.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, they weren't war games, actually, Karen. They were exercises of the air defense system.
Okay.
Okay.
Exercise. So what's the difference between an exercise and a war game, then?
Well, a war game means war. It means major, simulating major conflict and activity over a large geographic area, like a nuclear attack or an attack simulated of the former Soviet Union attacking Western Europe. Those were serious war games. An exercise is a test of something, in this case, the air defense system, to locate, observe, identify or not identify, and then have a response to that non-identification of an aircraft that may have wandered into U.S. airspace without authorization, that it could be subject to hijacking, that could be subject to a one-way suicidal mission, that could be carrying things improper, drugs or others. So the simulation was an exercise of, do we do air defense? And, of course, we do that. We track drug shipments coming into the country from Canada and especially the Caribbean. And we do hostile aircraft concerns. They were reduced considerably post-Cold War, but they're still there. And so they're really an exercise. And sometimes you'd exercise a region like the Northeast, the North Central, or the Western Pacific. And the Air Force is principally responsible for that. With some Navy and Army involvement, and typically the National Guard has the interceptors usually available. So those were local things. So that's just an exercise, kind of like a hockey team having a practice instead of playing the full season.
Okay, but have you seen Paul Thompson's timeline where he describes all the multiple exercises that were being conducted, like Global Guardian?
I've read it some time ago, if that's the one you're referring to. The one I saw was tightly typed in 3 pages, as I recall. And I fully agree. What I saw there indicates that there were several exercises. And, yes, let me jump and say that there could have been. One explanation is, why would we have it? I should give you that background, too, and your listeners. The week after Labor Day, the week of 11 September, would be an excellent time to have such an exercise. And the reason for that is, number one, you've got the holiday traffic reduced. You've also got people back from vacations working in the military and the government. And you've got lighter travel loads, as I say. I believe the 11th was a Tuesday, and that's consistent with scheduling in the middle of the week after you've had set-up times on Monday. The determination to have that exercise, we should also reflect that Bush Cheney knew they were elected, I believe, sometime in December of 2000. They had at least 30 days before coming to the White House, but most significantly, after they came into office in January of 2001, they had 8 months plus to perhaps orchestrate, set up, permit to happen, seek to benefit from 9/11 style attack. They would have had an opportunity to know what the air defense system post Cold War drawdowns had looked like, which were very much reduced from the Cold War alert status and monitoring status. So Cheney and people working with Cheney would have known of how a threat like 9/11 could happen, and they would know what the schedules were for exercises. And he'd been Secretary of Defense for nearly 4 years in the Bush 1 administration, from 89 to 90, late 91, early 92. So Cheney himself would have perhaps a detailed knowledge of how to manipulate the air defense exercises if he had foreknowledge of the attack coming.
Okay, so the change of protocols that happened in June when Bush gave Cheney the authority to oversee counterterrorism exercises, and they changed the protocol so that all intercepts of hijacked planes had to go through the Secretary of Defense, i.e. Rumsfeld. Those happened in June. So who was actually, do you think, in charge of, if there were overlapping exercises on the morning of September 11th, would that have been Cheney?
I think quite probably. And I think quite probably Cheney asserted the presidential role, with the president being decision maker, and usually a shoot down order, not usually, but under ideal circumstances, would have the president's advanced knowledge and coordination and concurrence, if not direct authorization. So that would be one of the arguments that Cheney could use, that the White House Situation Room or the White House Office of the President had to be the authorizing activity. Therefore, the coordinating. And they may have been trying to set up a new protocol where Cheney, and I can tell you most probably Cheney asserted his greater knowledge to W, and that was why the exercise was taking place with the president reading school books, even upside down, to children in Florida. Because if it was really serious to have the president observe how things are going to go on, he would have stayed in the Situation Center in the Pentagon basement.
Well, we do have a caller right now. There's some other questions that I'd like to ask you, too. But let me
and be very specific with the answers.
Okay, but let me bring on Roy from Pennsylvania. Hello, Roy. Did you have a question or a comment?
Roy? I'm familiar kind of with the whole kind of thing going on. And I'm kind of wondering, like, what you see might be happening next. Like, is there going to be possibly, like, another event, so to speak, or not?
Well, it depends, you know, like lots of complex things in life, where you start your criteria. If your criteria is, do you believe that the Islamists and Al-Qaeda alone is exclusively trying to attack us, or do you think there's an internal conspiracy, you know, at the other extreme, involving Cheney, and again, his conduct is consistent with him hiding that fact, okay?
Oh, yeah, I got creeped me out.
Okay, if you go to that extreme in analysis, what we used to do is, in the Pentagon, we call it murder boarding, or in some cases, war gaming on a blackboard. And you look at the scenarios and the possibilities. If we jump to, if you're concerned about how guilty Cheney and the Bush people are at manipulating this so that we go to war to steal other people's oil, which is one very believable scenario based on the facts and their conduct, as I said.
Oh, yeah.
Go ahead.
I think I remember hearing somewhere, it was probably early yesterday or day before yesterday. I have been listening today because our power's out. But I think I heard something say that Congress pretty much admitted, or a few people admitted that, like, I think before or after the war started, something like that, that going through war in the Middle East, what would be the reason? And I think every one of them wrote down oil, pretty much, is one of the primary reasons. And, which it seems like definitely, and now they're loading so much propaganda against Iran, so it seems like, I think I remember hearing that Iran, like, they used to be basically a democracy and all kinds of, they had, like, different departments and stuff like that, and everyone's happy until, I think it was called Operation Ajax or something like that. And it was this thing in the 50s where we overthrew their elected person and then put in one dictator that we sort of hired.
Okay, well, that was Mossadegh was his name, and he was elected, and he wanted to nationalize the U.S. and British oil company interests in Iran.
Yeah, yeah.
And we overthrew him in an arrangement that was CIA-directed and installed the Shah, yes, who was pro-U.S. But you asked me earlier in your statement, you said, did I believe there might be another event or circumstance? And again, if you believe that Cheney and Bush and this conspiracy occurred, again, consistent with their conduct and actions, like they're trying to hide that it did, then you can conclude quite probably they will try and do something before the election. They could be pushing for McCain because they've got an understanding with John McCain, although it troubles me that he would do this, that he will pardon them. That's remotely possible. But it's also possible that Bush and Cheney will, if you believe the worst of them, will try and arrange for detonations of weapons around U.S. cities. The missing five or six nuclear warheads that were, that went from North Dakota to Louisiana and then were reported on the Louisiana tarmac as why are these loaded nukes here on this bomber? I can tell you, having been involved in nuclear missile planning and activities, I am astonished because it would take at least more than four and lots and at least nine in some cases errors in judgment and procedures for that to have occurred. Now, were they trying to take those and do that situation? I think we have to worry.
That sounds like a movie that I saw once.
Yeah.
We've got to worry before now. You're taking a break, Carol?
Yeah, so we're going to have to come back to this in just a few minutes.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Great host, great topics, free speech at its best. This is We the People Radio Network.
Let's impeach George W. Bush. It's long, long overdue. While we're at it, let's make sure to impeach Dick Cheney, too. They're world-class criminals like you never seen before. Start impeachment right away and stop another war.
Hello, welcome back to Questioning War, Organizing Resistance. I'm Carol Brier, and I'm speaking with Michael Maxwell, and also a caller from Pennsylvania, and we were just talking about what happened a year ago when suddenly they found several nuclear weapons on an airplane in Louisiana that shouldn't have been there, and heads rolled over that, didn't they? There was a big shakeup in the Air Force because of that, wasn't there?
Yes,
Michael.
Yes, there supposedly was, and I'll tell you my theory. My theory is that those people were sacrificial lambs, that somebody set it up trying to take those nukes so the Air Force would lose track of them and not know where they were and maybe not even miss them. And the people who were responsible for their security, they were going to take five or six empty missiles from North Dakota down to Louisiana. And that directive had been issued and et cetera, coordinating paperwork had been issued. And somehow five or six armed nuclear weapons, or ready to be armed nuclear weapons, but fully functioning, were placed on that plane and showed up in Louisiana, and some alert airman on the tarmac said, gee, these things have got live nukes in them. Not supposed to be here.
I remember hearing about that. Wasn't that on CNN and, like, even in mainstream news?
Oh, yeah, everywhere. It was widely reported. I mean, the Pentagon kept it suppressed for a while. But what happened was the Louisiana-based commanders and group couldn't fail to acknowledge it had happened. It had gotten all over the base.
Yeah.
And there were six or eight Air Force people ranging from sergeants to, I think, perhaps a full colonel or brigadier, purportedly altered in their careers and et cetera. But my suspicion is that there was perhaps extreme negligence, explanation one. My second explanation is that they were set up as sacrificial lambs because somebody perhaps affiliated with Cheney, again, consistent with all of his conduct and his refusal to let the vice president's records be seen, were trying to take one or two or all six of those, detonate them in U.S. cities in advance, one could theorize, in advance of the election and so on. What do you think?
I'm not really sure if they would do that, like, in our cities and stuff, because, like, if they were doing all this stuff, then the cities, like, maybe, especially, like, New York, you know, like, Chicago, whatever, all these big ones would have a lot of infrastructure that they would use. Like, a lot of corporations are housed there and stuff like that. Like, even people that they are high up to where, like, they'd be talking or whatever. I'm not sure if they would do that, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was just anywhere where they considered just nothing really that good, or if it was just like a random other country, like another one of those proxy things, as an excuse to go against another other country. Seems like just out of nowhere, like a couple weeks ago. Sounds familiar about the whole Georgia-Russia thing. And
yep.
If I remember right, South Ossetia was part of Georgia, wasn't it, or was it Russia?
Well, it's part of Georgia, and Georgia was part of the Soviet Union.
Yeah, but it's not too willing to be part of Georgia. And
yeah.
Just before the whole incident, the U.S. military was doing exercises in Georgia, and they were encouraging Georgia to go after South Ossetia.
Yeah.
So it was a very provocative
act. Well, now, Carol, I'm not sure how much exercises we were doing there necessarily, but we did have training people helping the Georgians do exercises with U.S. new U.S. equipment that we were providing. That's true.
Yeah, I remember the Russians reported a whole lot of our equipment was found, like a bunch of our weapons, and I think it was like 2,700.
They had every right to be more than annoyed.
Yeah, it's like, what makes no sense to me is, like, I think Russia wasn't too happy about Georgia attacking South Ossetia, so they went in. Probably wasn't the smart thing to do. But then when our government turns around and flips out about it, it's almost like they think they have the right to after the stuff that they've done. It makes
sense. Once again, it's very strange because the White House gave encouragement to the Georgian president and again, it could be just blundering bad judgment on George Bush's part, which is easy to understand as occurring, not easy to tolerate. It could have also been, you know, part of the big Cheney manipulation. It could have been an effort to help to help McCain.
It seems like the neocons are really hardcore in trying to start something with Russia, which is suicide, because that's like... That pretty much is World War III right there, and it'd be like we started, which would be really bad.
Well, I don't care they're prepared to go that far. But bringing it back to 9/11, again, for Cheney to hide proper reports to the Congress and for him and Bush to refuse to put their presidential records, even the classified ones, into the presidential records depository, which is required by law.
Yeah.
So they're hiding all the secret documents and even the non-secret documents from any review is consistent with their hiding the most scandalous, you know, scoundrelous activities we can imagine.
Yeah,
so their conduct
really
is consistent with being guilty of what you just said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they say it's often not the crime where the crooks are caught, but it's the cover-up. And we do see the systemic destruction of evidence and the lying. And I think the reason there is a 9/11 truth movement is that they really botched 9/11. I don't know what the original intention was or what the original plan was, but the cover story is so bad. If it wasn't for the acquiescence and the silence of the mainstream press.
Well, and then also, Carol,
a long time ago.
I must add, also, they get caught in so many lies and inconsistencies, especially W, where he's holding the school book upside down to the students. He later says that he saw the first attack before he went in to sit with the children in Florida, when in fact the attack occurred 5 or 15 minutes after he was sitting down.
Well, no,
the
first plane attack before he went into the schoolroom, but it would have the only possibility for him to have actually seen it is if it had been on a military camera emission that was secret, because the only footage that the public saw was the Nadeff brothers' film, which wasn't aired until after the attacks, like the next day. So there is some speculation that, you know, they were monitoring it. They did have footage of the first attack that those in the know actually did get to see,
when Fleischer came in to talk to him, if that's who it was, and whispered in his ear, that would have had to be consistent with him learning about the second attack.
Correct.
Yeah.
Would have prompted the president to get up immediately. Well, the country's under attack.
Yeah, but he probably, I mean, he knew about the hijackings prior to the school. He decided to go along with the photo op anyway, even though we knew the country was under attack. But this
I agree. His conduct, again, is consistent with him knowing in advance.
The thing I want to ask you is, like, who was really in command? Because Bush was not in command. Bush was getting orders written on a piece of paper on the other side of the room. And I want to know who was writing the orders for Bush on what to do and what to say in that situation, because that's what he was doing. He was like the deer caught in the headlights. He didn't know what to do. He didn't know how to
respond. Most probably Dick Cheney, clearly. And Cheney had a great deal to benefit. Cheney, as Secretary of Defense, gave Halliburton and its subsidiary KBR all sorts of support contracts for the military.
Oh, yeah, there's no
good. Cheney then comes in as Vice President, and he orchestrates, as the evidence seems to show, a war involving Halliburton getting.
Yeah, we have a break now.
We got another break.
Come back in just a few minutes.
We the People Radio Network. Educational. Inspirational. Constitutional. You're listening to We the People Radio Network.
Welcome back to Questioning War, Organizing Resistance, and that's Martin Oakes with his great song, Building 7, and all the lyrics and links to that song are also on his website. And we were talking about the chain of command and the morning of 9/11, and who was issuing orders that day. I think one thing I want to ask you, Michael, is Norm Mineta, in his testimony to the 9/11 Commission, described how a young man came in and said, the plane is 50 miles out, the plane is 30 miles out, the plane is 10 miles out. Do the orders still stand? And Cheney responding, yes, of course the orders still stand. Did I say anything to the contrary? And that was before the Pentagon was hit.
Uh-huh.
And it was excluded from the 9/11 Commission report.
Yes,
there's a lot that was excluded from that.
I think
this was a particularly, you know, damning look at who was issuing orders that day. That was from the Presidential Emergency Operating Center.
Uh-huh.
So doesn't that sound...
It sounds consistent with Cheney being in charge. It sounds consistent with Cheney giving the direct chain of command authority to shoot something down or not. It sounds consistent with Cheney and all of his other conduct and failing to explain himself fully, with him knowing that that plane was going to hit the Pentagon and permitting it to do so. That's what it sounds consistent with.
Okay, and there's one other thing I wanted to ask you, too. Charles Liddig was just elevated to the point where he could actually stand watch at the National Military Command Center.
That's right, he was a Navy captain at the time.
Right, and he's just a captain. And so the day before, he is asked to stand watch from 8:30 till 10:30, I believe, which was the key time, but it was like just after they had known about the first hijacking. Then the other person who had disappears, and we don't know what he does during this.
Who was the Army Brigadier General? Who was the National Military Command Center commander on a regular basis, or the senior officer, and he'd been like at least a year there. And the Navy Captain Liddick had barely learned the system, barely finished the orientation class, which, by the way, I also took at one point some years ago. And
so where do you think that guy went? And
he may have had a legitimate day off, and Liddick came in as his deputy.
But it was only that 2-hour window, that critical 2 hours.
Again, it is strange, and I think that the Army Brigadier and now Rear Admiral Liddick should be asked to explain where they were so we fully understand what occurred and why and who communicated to them and when under oath in a transcribed and videotaped presentation in a new investigation, as should Bush and Cheney and all the other folks that weren't interviewed.
Speaking of like a new investigation, I remember I hear a quote once. Somebody said that it might not be a good idea because you would have to make sure that it's completely independent. Otherwise, actually, it was George Carlin said that. He was interviewed by somebody at a book signing. He said the person questioned him what he thought about having a new investigation, and he said basically, like, it probably wouldn't accomplish a whole lot because it would be controlled by someone who is in with the whole, like, Cheney and all that, or whoever.
I'm sorry, Greg. Who was this that said this? Excuse me. I didn't hear.
It was George Carlin that originally.
Oh, heavens. Sure.
Yeah. And he said basically, it probably because he said, like, power is going to do as power wants, and they control the media and stuff. But an investigation, if it was going to happen, would have to be totally independent and even possibly like an international investigation with a whole bunch of countries.
I fully agree, and that's what the European Union is calling for. And
yeah,
by the way, let me compliment the late George Carlin. He was not only very funny, he was also very smart.
Oh, he was, like, hugely intelligent when it came to stuff like politics, foreign policy, things like that. And, like, I was surprised, too. And he puts a nice amount of humor into it to also help people tune into it.
Yes, but there is a call for an international independent commission investigation. The European Union has called for that in at least two reports. The name escapes me of the principal author, Carol may know. But again, what are you doing and what are all your listeners doing, Carol, to demand a new independent international investigation free of any influence by our government?
There is the New York City ballot initiative to create an independent commission with subpoena power, with people like the victims' families on it, and people like William Pepper and Mike Gravel, I think, is somebody else who is one of the people who was supposed to be on it. And also, I had an author on my show who wrote a book on the causes of war, and he was saying that we should have a truth and reconciliation situation. In fact, I think even Dennis Kucinich is also calling for that, too, because they're saying that 9/11 was basically done to launch a global war and that it's better to get the truth out. Pardon?
It was used basically as a centerpiece and a selling point to, like, regardless of, like, what details people believe in as far as, like, the truth goes and stuff, because there is, numerous different schools of thought, like, some say that the two big towers were demos. Some say, well, you know, they just fell or whatever because they're hit. But then Tower 7 is obviously like, that's that was demoed as far as I'm concerned. And then there's some that say the Pentagon was hit with a plane, and some say like a UAV, I think it was, or something like that.
Yeah.
But even at the very minimum, like the commonality that all of the different schools of thought have is that it was used as basically a selling point to try and point blank, like, to get in the Middle East, get in there, and then, because once you had that foothold, like, which they used Afghanistan for, then they were like, well, you know, the terrorists, blah, 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 terrorists, Saddam, blah, and they keep throwing those words together, it's word association, to where, then, boom, there's a fact right there, and then we're in there, and
The whole, 9/11 was basically the foundation for the whole war on terrorism and innumerable wars, endless wars for our lifetime, as well as the attacks on the Constitution of the United States. And also, Michael, I'm sure you're familiar with this. Also, the most dramatic reorganization of the military in North America, where we actually have gone from a democracy to a pseudo-fascist dictatorship, where we've lost all of our rights. So that so that was the pretext for 9/11, but some say that if we could at least get the truth out about it, then that could prevent wars, and we can undo this horrific legislation. And it's not just the United States. The Patriot Act and all that awful legislation was mirrored in countries throughout the world, which have crack down on all dissent, calling them, terrorists.
Well, Carol, I agree with you that our rights are in jeopardy. We haven't lost them all. For example, we're exercising free speech still on your excellent radio program right now. And however, that is in jeopardy. I agree with the Patriot Act and the Cheney-Bush conspiracy.
They're basically right now trying to, definitely with the removing of rights and stuff like free speech, I'm worried that Second Amendment might be next. I don't picture them getting away with that, at least not easily. And, they're definitely moving towards, in the last, I'm guessing, few years, maybe decade, whatever the time frame is, a lot of the new weapons development has been things like, well, lasers is one, but other than that, things like energy, like directed energy, where it sprays out in a pattern, things where it's relatively short range, which is key, and there are things which you would use in riot control and stuff like that. And it makes you think, why would the military need stuff like that? If the military is going to, use legitimate defense and stuff like that, it's going to be mid to long range, rifle, stuff like that, or whatever. But the stuff they've been specializing in is, non-lethal or semi-lethal, and things which you would use against the population, which is, I would hope more people in the military wouldn't do something like that, but it wouldn't be the first time it's happened, sadly.
Yeah. We have another break, guys.
Fair enough.
News, politics, cover-ups, government corruption. You're listening to We the People Radio Network.
WTPRN.
Is over if you want it. Peace.
Peace. P-E-A-C-E. P-E-A-C-E.
So this is springtime. The years have been dark. The sun is now shining. Love is the spark.
Hello, welcome back to Question War, Organizing Resistance. I'm Carol Brier, speaking with Michael Maxwell. And we were just discussing during the break on, what people can do about the situation. I think it's really clear that we still have a long way to go as far as public education, pressuring Congress and demanding a real investigation of 9/11. But I do want to mention, since I've been networking with a bunch of activists, that there was a big truth tour through Canada that culminated in a march in Ottawa. People were demanding an investigation of 9/11 of the Canadian Parliament on September 11th. And there was also a big demonstration and vigil at the U.S. Embassy in London, also demanding an investigation. And there was also a big march in Brussels, where the European Parliament is, too. And despite the rain, there were 400 people demanding a new investigation. And locally, I organized a film festival in Oakland at the Grand Lake Theater, and there were about 600 people who came, and we showed films for 11 hours, including a German documentary and an Italian documentary, and the Italian one, Zero, an Investigation into 9/11, which is very good, very powerful, was also shown on Russian television. So it probably reached between 20 and 30 million Russians. And it raised so many questions about 9/11. I just found out that in the discussions that followed, they asked the audience, okay, how many of you people believe the official story? And not a single person raised their hands in the audience. And Reuters did a poll, and the world is divided. It's only a minority that believe the official Al Qaeda did it narrative. The majority do not. So that is hopeful when you consider that the corporate mainstream media, for the most part, has gone out of its way to support the official narrative and has done its best to discredit and attack those people like me who have been raising questions all these years.
Greg, have you had a chance to see Zero?
Roy.
Roy. Have you had a chance to see Zero?
No, I don't think I've seen that one yet.
Well, absolutely. Get a hold of it. And Carol, can I get it from your website?
No, we don't do that, but you can order it through the webs, a number of websites, and one of the best websites to keep up with the 9/11 truth news is 911blogger.com, and so if you purchase it through that website, that helps that website. The other website, which I think is an absolutely invaluable resource and is probably the best one for people who don't know anything about a 9/11 to go to, is 911truth.org, because they have really good materials for the person who doesn't know anything and needs to familiarize themselves. And that is one thing we have, you know, in the years that I've been involved in the movement, at first we had nothing. There were no books, there were no documentaries, and now we have just this incredible abundance, richness, and wealth of materials to educate the public. And in the beginning, people had VHS, and it was expensive to make videotapes and to distribute those. And now it's so cheap, you can burn these DVDs for next to nothing and just give them away. So that has made our job much easier. And also, one thing that our particular group has done, too, is create 911tv.org. And what we've done is get out documentaries to community access television stations across the country, and that has really helped. That's one of the few places where you can, again, exercise free speech, and we do have to take advantage of these. They are under threat. We don't know when they're going to corporatize the internet and block access.
Yeah, that's what they're going for next, because I think they, like, whoever it is trying to, whatever groups are trying to discredit all the, like, the truth movement and everything, and just all that kind of stuff in general. They've been targeting the internet, like, fiercely. It's been a while that they've been doing it, but more recently, as more time goes by, they're attacking it more and more, saying how it needs to be regulated, blah, 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 and, like, the service providers, since it's hard because they have what's called a geographic monopoly. Like, if I'm at, like, say, this location or whatever, then I can't go to, like, numerous different companies to get internet or, like, any kind of independent servers. Because, like, they're just not in the area. It's like an electric company. And they've been going after the Internet a lot because they know that's the medium, which is still, and the First Amendment pretty much still exists there, unlike most other media.
Yes. Yeah, I have to say, you know, I am running for Congress, and so my opponent, she thinks the greatest threat to America right now is the cyber terrorist threat, and she's working very closely with the NSA to protect us from, you know, free speech.
Yeah. Wow. I love how they use the word protect, and they use all these words, like, to try and fluff it up and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Will you have a chance to debate in this issue?
Actually, there was a candidates forum last Tuesday that I participated in, but we didn't actually get to debate. We got to make a statement of 3 minutes, and then they posed questions, and we each had like a 1 minute response to the questions. But I have, you know, challenged her. I've marched on her office so many times, sometimes with television stations in tow. So she basically knows where I stand, and she's really bad on 9/11. She's also the best friends with Nancy Pelosi. So I did.
Bad news.
Yeah, it's really bad news. But I did. I mean, I must admit, I do understand how people are busy and they don't have time to look at all the stuff that comes their way. So and I know that I've given her a lot of 9/11 DVDs, a lot of 9/11 books, and she's never looked at them. Like, we asked her about Building 7, and she just was totally ignorant. She didn't know it existed, that it fell, anything.
Wow.
She's just like totally, totally ignorant. So what I did was, when we were at the forum, she was actually phoning in from Washington, D.C., and I gave her her assistant a copy of Zero, an Investigation into 9/11, and also Richard Gage's latest DVD, which looks and just exposes, you know, how all those collapses had all the characteristics of controlled demolition and
Absolutely. None
of the characteristics of being brought down by fire. And I said, now be sure to tell her, you know, this is shown on Russian television. Because I don't know if it is possible sometimes to, you know, break through the layers of denial and people wanting to put their head in the sand. I mean, I'm sure Anna would love to believe the official story and not question it. I know she was very supportive of Bush in the wake of 9/11, but I don't know if it's possible for her to, you know, be awoken or come around. I did protest Nancy Pelosi. She was on her book tour recently, and so I went to the event, but I didn't make too much of a ruckus, because in the audience, in addition to Anna Escher, there was also Jackie Speer. And Jackie Speer, if you guys recall, she was down in Jonestown when Congressman Ryan was killed, and she was shot and left on a tarmac. She was rescued by the Guyanese government 22 hours later. And Jackie has some courage, and I tried to give her the information about 9/11 and continuity of government.
Was Jackie working for Eschew then?
No, Jackie was working with Congressman Ryan. She was on a fact-finding mission.
Oh, no, I know that. I know that. But is she now, are you, so Jackie was just participating.
She has taken Tom Lantos's place in Congress. She is a congressman.
Oh, wonderful.
She is like a little ray of hope and possibility. But, you know, she's under incredible... Eschew has taken her under her wing. So she's, you know, in a very controlled position. And I think it is very, very hard for us to actually get real information to these congresspeople and help them resist the tremendous amount of pressure that is on them. We have another caller, too, from Arizona, who I would like to give a chance. Maureen, did you have something to add? We don't have much time. Maureen?
I was listening to alternate radio the other day, and it wasn't one of my shows. It was on my computer. And I heard someone say about the Beijing Bird's Nest Stadium that it was built with the seal from 9/11.
Oh.
And remember, that was shipped out very quickly.
Yes,
well,
it was,
yes.
To hide the evidence.
Yes.
It played on my mind tonight. I finally Googled it, and I wanted to see when Beijing was given permission, you know, to be the host for the games, and that was on July 13th, 2001.
Very interesting.
2 months prior to them, you know, them the attack on 9/11.
Yeah.
And it is now one of the largest steel buildings in the world.
Wow. Well, thanks.
And that is our World Trade Center steel.
Yeah. Thanks for calling, Maureen.
I'd love to hear what you guys
have
to say.
That's the music
about that.
And the